Separating the policy from the politics, delving deeper into what is happening in our world today, and sharing the information you may not know if you didn't listen to this show. iHub Radio presents The Lovable Liberal. This is the Anita Rufus Show, civil discourse on current events and politics. Here's Anita.
And thank you so much for joining me for this second hour of the show. Listen, civil discourse, I am absolutely committed to that. Civil disobedience, that doesn't bother me either. Although I have to admit, I'm not a demonstrator. I'm a talker, which is why I love being on the air. This is now, how long have I been doing this? My gosh, 30 some years. I want to talk about the upcoming vote, because this may be one of the most consequential elections in my lifetime, for sure. Yeah, we say that a lot of times. You know, when we're in the middle of a war, should we elect a president who'll keep us in war, get us out of war? When we're in the middle of an economic downturn, should we go with someone we think is going to be great for the economy as opposed to somebody who is focused on other issues? There are lots of issues that are particular to their time in history, and we often say, oh, this may be the most important election in our lifetime. And I really do feel like this may be, because the damage that this president has done to our system of government almost cannot be overstated. When so many Americans have lost faith in our institutions, and that has been deliberately put forward by this president, that is of great concern to me. When you deliberately pit people against one another, when you deliberately divide states into red states and blue states, you know, it's so, if we took out of the virus numbers all the people who died in blue states, why, our numbers wouldn't be bad at all. Well, yeah, since blue states are the largest with the most population and the most productive in putting money into the government system. But hey, why quibble? Well, we have an important election coming up. And as I said, who will appoint Supreme Court justices may be one of the most important criteria for who you vote for. We are, once again, experiencing the attempt to interfere with our election. To skew the result, we don't even know yet what the result is or how skewed it might have been. But this is about either encouraging people to vote for the wrong reason, or discouraging people from voting at all, or in the case of Russia in particular and their involvement in, for example, online media, they want to sow discord among the American people because they want to diminish our leadership role in the world. They want to get us out of NATO because NATO represents the biggest threat to Russia being able to once again expand its influence in Europe. They want to destroy international faith in our process. If our process is broken down, then why should other countries want to emulate us? And the thing that has made America so great in the world is that other nations have wanted to emulate us because we held ourselves up to our own standards, and we didn't always meet them. Well, with regard to what is going on with trying to influence our election, in spite of the president never wanting to talk about this, especially when it comes to Russia, Where is that PP tape? The U.S. government, this is one of those little things you might not know if you didn't listen to this show. The U.S. government sent out text messages to cell phones in Russia and in Iran, offering up to $10 million for information about people trying to attack our voting system. I don't know what happened to all of our intelligence services, but the idea that we're going to offer $10 million in a reward for somebody to turn other people in, if that's the only way to protect our voting, we're in bigger trouble than I thought we were. The impact of the kind of influence on social media that has an audience out there in our country that seems to be either uneducated enough or stupid enough to believe just about anything is very frightening. There was, you know, we've had these problems with a lot of the peaceful protests since the death of George Floyd and so many others. Peaceful protests that have turned into not so peaceful protests, often instigated by people who were not among the peaceful protesters. The Black Lives Matter protests that have been going on in Portland, Oregon, there was a story on social media that the Black Lives Matter protesters in Portland had burned a stack of Bibles and then lit American flags on fire. And there was video. And of course, the media loves anything that, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. And if it's a fire, we'll put that on first. So there was even a video put out to prove these outrageous claims, which it turns out were not true. Black Lives Matter protesters were not burning Bibles. They were not burning the American flag in Portland or anywhere else that I'm aware of. But Russian hackers and bots got this stuff out onto social media, and there were a lot of people who just wanted to believe it. That the idea was that liberals and Democrats were looking for some kind of godless disorder to take over in our country. And it went viral. The New York Post wrote about it. A conservative paper called The Federalist said about the protesters, this is who they are. Donald Trump Jr., of course, tweeted it out. Now, it is true that there were a few protesters among the many tens of thousands who might have burned a single Bible. But most of the protesters weren't aware that might was going on and didn't really care because that wasn't why they were out there protesting. This thing about Bible burning by protesters in Portland was one of the first viral Russian disinformation campaigns of this election season. And this isn't just about Russia. There are other countries out there, including North Korea, Iran, China, they all, Ukraine. For some reason, Ukraine seems to have the most capable hackers in the world. There are a lot of threats out there. But if we buy into just about anything that is said on social media that fits our preconceived notion of who we trust and who we don't, then we are making a huge mistake and we are, in fact, helping those who want to discredit what we stand for as a nation in the world. And the president may be one of the biggest perpetrators of this kind of fraud because of the way he keeps talking about how this election's going to be rigged if he loses. You'll notice he never says the election is rigged if he wins. It's just rigged if he loses. And the whole thing about mail-in voting, this is why foreign countries could counterfeit ballots. They could forge signatures. Well, yeah, they could, but every state has its own voting system. And yes, the system is going to be heavily taxed because so many people are afraid to show up in person. But let's face it. California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Oregon, Utah, Vermont, Washington, D.C., voters are all automatically getting ballots in the mail in those states. And I know here in California, if you get a ballot for mail-in voting and you decide you don't want to mail it in, you want to go and vote on election day, or you want to go to one of the early voting places, and people are lining up already for hours in lines around the country to do early voting. There is huge interest in this election, and there should be in every election. But if you get a ballot in the mail and you don't want to mail it in, you want to go and vote in person either early or on election day, just take that mail-in ballot with you to the polling place. Give it to whoever's sitting behind the table. They will give you a paper ballot. You vote, and your vote will get counted. 32 states require mail-in ballots to be received by election day, which is why this whole insanity of what's going on with the Postal Service is of concern. And of course, it is Trump's big donor political appointee who is right now screwing around with the post office. 32 states require a ballot to be received by election day. There are states that require an excuse in order to get a mail-in ballot. Texas, Tennessee, South Carolina, Mississippi, Louisiana, Kentucky, Indiana, and New York require an excuse to vote absentee, though New York is planning to change that system because they want to make it as easy as possible for people to vote. There are states where absentee ballots are supposed to be notarized. Give me a break. There are people who don't have cars to even get to a polling place. How are they supposed to get to a notary? Voters in Rhode Island have until October 13th to request absentee ballots. October 20th in New Mexico and Nevada. States have different procedures and different dates. Find out what your state requires. It is not impossible to wear a mask and go to a polling place either early or on election day with a certain amount of protection and vote. Do not let your vote be squandered because you're scared of the post office or whether it'll be counted or not. You must vote.
She's lovable. She's liberal. And she's here to bring a tone of civility to political discussion you aren't likely to find anywhere else. The Anita Rufus Show, with your lovable liberal on iHub Radio. Here's Anita.
Okay, I am talking about voting and why it is so important. So let me just give you a few quick facts about this. First of all, the Trump campaign is suing states all over the country, trying to stop those states from sending out mail-in ballots. In Nevada, they urged a federal judge in Las Vegas to block a state law because it was passed by a Democratic-controlled legislature, and to prevent mail-in ballots from going to all active Nevada voters. The Trump campaign, get this, the Trump campaign argued that sending ballots to nearly 1.7 million active voters in Nevada will impede Republicans' ability to elect candidates because the law will confuse Republican voters and create an incentive to stay away from the polls. The Trump campaign is saying Republican voters are too dumb to know how to vote in Nevada? There have been some voting irregularities. In Dothan, Alabama, a woman filled out an extra absentee ballot to help elect her boyfriend. She was caught. In Rochester, New York, a man voted twice because a bar was giving free beer to people with I voted stickers. He was caught. In Des Moines, Iowa, a woman filled out two absentee ballots in 2016, that election, because President Trump had hinted that her first ballot could be altered and counted for Hillary Clinton. She was caught. In the Georgia primary runoff last month, after the president had encouraged people to vote by mail and then go vote in person to make sure their vote would get counted, in the Georgia primary runoff, almost 1,000 people voted by mail and then deliberately went and voted in person. They were caught and they will be prosecuted. Double voters could face up to 10 years in prison and a $100,000 fine. Voting twice, even in states with all mail balloting, is very rare. In the state of Washington, which is an all-mail voting state, only 147 cases of voter fraud, 147, were suspected out of over 3 million votes cast in that state. I'm good at math, but even I can't calculate how small a percentage that is of voter fraud. Now, Trump claimed, with no evidence, that states like California wouldn't send ballots to Republican voters, or that the ballots were going to be stolen from the mailbox, or the postal workers could be robbed, that signatures would be forged, falsified ballots would be sent in from places like North Korea. There is no evidence of widespread voter fraud, either by mail or otherwise. It is true, we probably won't know the result of the election on election night, because there are states that won't count mail-in ballots until after the polls have closed on election day. There are other states that count them as they come in, so they have those tallies ready to combine with the tallies that come in on voting day. Now, I want to also make another point about voting, and I think this is really important. Baby boomers, which there's a generation that is so used to being in control of everything. Well, guess what? Boomers, it's time to move over. The younger generations are now the majority in this country. Millennials and their younger brothers, sisters, and children now make up a majority of the population in this country. 50.7% of United States residents, as of July of last year, were under 40. Over 50% of our population is under the age of 40. Generation Z and younger generations are over 160 million people in this country right now. So look, young people, if you care about your own future, if you care about this country, you need to vote this time. It does make a difference. And it will make a big difference in your lives and in the future that you have for yourselves and your children. This is not a small thing. You're not going to overthrow the government by protesting or bashing in windows or setting fires, but you will overthrow the government by voting. For God's sake, do it early, do it by mail, do it in person.
The Lovable Liberal continues now on iHub Radio. Here's Anita Rufus.
And thank you so much again for joining me. Phone number here is 760-544-8255, or you can email studio@ihubradio.com if you want to send in a comment or a question. You can even text 760-699-0202. A number that I can't remember without looking it up. I want to finish on the importance of voting. Couple of items that this one just blew me away. In Tennessee, where there have been some protests about taking down Confederate statues and Black Lives Matter and issues like that, where there have been protesters, and some protesters have been literally sitting in on state property. Tennessee Governor Bill Lee, a Republican, quietly signed a bill last week that could result in some of the protesters losing their right to vote in Tennessee. What, you say? Now, of course, we did hear this week that no less than our own attorney general, who's supposed to be the attorney general representing the people of the United States, but has clearly decided he just represents the president. Nevertheless, he talked about bringing charges of sedition against protesters. There's a sedition law that nobody has invoked in 100 years. Anyway, Governor Bill Lee of Tennessee signed this bill that could result in some protesters losing the right to vote. How, you say? Because this bill, pushed through the Tennessee legislature, increases the penalties for people who illegally camp on state grounds. So protesters who were doing a sit-in on the state capitol grounds could now be prosecuted for a Class E felony, punishable by up to 6 years in prison. And if you're convicted of a felony in Tennessee, you lose the right to vote. So now, just for protesting, you could be considered a felon. Forget the Constitution. So, last word on voting. I want to share with you something from a Tom Friedman column. He said, and I love this, he said, personally, I will walk, I will jog, I will skip, I will crawl, I will slither, I will bike, I will hike, I will hitchhike, I will drive, I will ride, I will run, I will fly, I will roll, I will be rolled, I will be carried, I will trek, I will train, I will trot, I will truck, I will strut, I will float, I will boat, I will ramble, I will amble. I will march, I will bus, I will taxi, I will Uber, Lyft, scooter, skateboard, or motorcycle. And I will wear a face mask, a face shield, gloves, goggles, a hazmat suit, a space suit, or a wetsuit. but I will damn well get to my neighborhood polling station to see that my vote for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris is cast and counted. If you need an incentive to go and vote, let the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg be your incentive, or let the column by Mr. Feinberg be your incentive. Okay, you know I like to share with you things you might not know if you didn't listen to this show. You will know that we have now passed 200,000 deaths from the virus, and it will be at least 300,000 by the end of the year, if not more. And all too often, in spite of the president's words, the blue states are getting things under control because they have governors who have been willing to continue the shutdowns and the mask mandates. The red states, especially through the Midwest belt, they're the ones that are now having the most problem. 200,000 plus Americans, and it is still being downplayed. And the president is still holding big rallies. And he had the gall at one of his rallies last week, where he was being questioned by a reporter who was down below the edge of the stage while the president was up on the stage. And he said she was evidently leaning too far into the stage with her microphone, and he kind of held up his hands and she backed up a bit and said, "Oh, I'm sorry." And he said, "Well, it's all right." And she said, "Well, aren't you concerned about everybody in the audience?" And he said, "No, I'm up here. I'm away from them. I get tested all the time. I'm not concerned." This is how much he cares about the people who show up who he wants to vote for him. When it comes to the virus, it is disgusting. Here's something that you might not know. This is who Trump is, allowing sycophants to adopt policies that both violate precedent and that violate human rights. A federal appeals court upheld a Trump administration policy that could lead to the deportation of about 400,000 immigrants who originally came to the U.S. under emergency circumstances like earthquakes or civil wars. You know, that thing that we always have led the world in compassion for people who are refugees, who cannot stay where they live. Well, now he's apparently willing to just send them back. We have led the world in these humanitarian policies that nations all over the world have emulated. Well, that isn't true anymore. Why would anyone want to emulate the policies? Well, maybe except for dictators. And as it turns out, I read an article this week that the right wing in Germany, is now using many of Trump's words and Trump's policies to push forward their own agenda, which is to move back toward what would have been considered normal under the Nazis. Air quality on the West Coast as a result of all the fires we've had is now the worst in the world. Long-term exposure to these particles that have been flying all over, including here in the Coachella Valley, increases the risk of asthma, lung disorders, heart attacks, strokes. Even short-term exposure to the air can lead to more respiratory problems as a result of this horrible wildfire season that we are in. And we still have 4 months to go before what we call wildfire season is over. Meanwhile, the smoke has already reached the East Coast, and is now being seen over Europe. You know that the president calls himself a great environmentalist, although he clearly does not believe in climate change. And scientists right now are protesting because Trump has picked a climate change skeptic for a key position over the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, known as the NOAA. The Deputy Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Environmental Observation and Prediction is now somebody named David Legates, who is a professor of climatology and a member of the Heartland Institute, a conservative think tank that denies that climate change represents a serious threat to the world. Well, yeah, let's put that guy in charge of something that has to do with protecting the oceans and the atmosphere. We have a Trump administration that is rejecting the DACA requests. This is for the Dreamers who came here, were brought here as children without any say in the matter, have grown up as Americans, have gone to American schools, are holding down many essential jobs like healthcare workers, getting their education, having children of their own who are American citizens. And while Barack Obama put them at the bottom of the list of people who could be deported, Trump stepped that program up and was going after these DACA people. And the Supreme Court actually ruled reinstating the DACA program. But the Trump administration is still rejecting requests for protection from people who are Dreamers. They don't care what the courts say. They only care about putting in judges who will say what they want them to say. Betsy DeVos, who is the Secretary of Education, wanted to boost pandemic relief for private schools. Well, a federal judge, who, by the way, was appointed by Donald Trump, he ruled that the education secretary, that her effort to boost the amount of emergency pandemic relief to private school students was illegal. The judge sided with the NAACP, which had brought this legal challenge against her policy. They criticized it as a ploy to divert emergency aid away from needy public schools to more affluent private schools. And might I add, there are statistics that came out this week that said that schools in affluent districts are not having as much trouble reopening as compared to public schools in poorer districts. If I were running for office right now, I would be running on the basis that while local control of schools is an important principle in America, funding schools based on local property taxes is reinstituting the kind of segregation and separate but equal, supposedly, that was struck down by Brown versus Board of Education, another landmark Supreme Court ruling. The idea that affluent school districts can open, sure. They can distance students, they can put up partitions that keep students safe, they can make sure that masks are provided to everybody. Poorer school districts can't do that. Why are we having this still a problem in 2020? It's disgusting.
The Lovable Liberal continues now on iHub Radio. Here's Anita Rufus.
Okay, in this last segment, I want to share some good news. Among the things that I mentioned that Ruth Bader Ginsburg was so instrumental in helping to bring about was the ability for same-sex couples to marry. And in fact, she was the first Supreme Court justice to perform a same-sex couple marriage. So let me just share with you the number of married same-sex households in the United States was almost 570,000 in 2019, up almost 70% in a five-year period, which was the year before the Supreme Court legalized same-sex marriage. 58% of the 980,000 same-sex couple households in 2019 were married couples. District of Columbia had the highest concentration of same-sex households, followed by Delaware, Oregon, Massachusetts, and Washington State, not even California. 48 is the average age for people in same-sex marriages. 47 is the average age for their spouses. So those May-December relationships are not as much with same-sex couples. I also want to share something with you. I just thought this was really fun. Rubik, the Rubik's Cube, if you've ever tried to do one. It turns out that Erno Rubik says that there are 43 quintillion ways to arrange a Rubik's Cube, but only one is correct. For what it's worth, it took him a month to get it right. I have never been able to get it right, and I watch some of these young kids who can do it in like a minute or less. Fight on them. I want to share something with you to close out the show. This is a piece that was written by Elaine Griffin Baker. And I was so taken with it as a kind of lament for the time that we are in right now. She said, there's no art in the White House. There's no literature or poetry in this White House. No music. No Kennedy Center award celebrations. There are no pets in the White House. No loyal man's best friend. No Socks the family cat. There's no kids' science fairs in the White House. There are no images of the first family enjoying themselves together in a moment of relaxation. No Obamas on the beach in Hawaii. Or Bushes fishing in Kennebunkport. No Reagans on horseback, no Kennedys playing touch football on the Cape. She says, I was thinking the other day of the summer when George H. Bush couldn't catch a fish and all of the grandkids made signs and counted the fishless days. And somehow, even if you didn't like George Bush, you got caught up in the joy of a family that loved each other and had fun. Where did that country go? Where did all of the fun and joy and expressions of love and happiness go? She said, we used to have a president that calmed and soothed the nation instead of dividing it. And a first lady that planted a garden instead of ripping one out. We are rudderless and joyless. We have lost the cultural aspects of society that make America great. We have lost our mojo, our fun, our happiness, the cheering on of others, the shared experiences of humanity that makes it all worth it. the challenges and the triumphs that we shared and celebrated. The unique can-do spirit of being an American that we've always been known for. We are lost. We have lost so much in so short a time. I will close that all out by reminding you that one of the most poignant things I heard today in the tributes to Ruth Bader Ginsburg was from somebody who had known her pretty well and who was lamenting the fact that she hadn't kept in touch with Ginsburg in recent months and felt so badly that she had missed the opportunity to really let her know how important Ruth Bader Ginsburg was to her. I will share with you that I had a letter to the editor published recently here in our local paper. There were two people who I knew very well who died recently. One was an incredible man named Joseph Beaver, and the other one was a rabbi named Joseph Hurwitz. Back in the early 90s, I worked with them on a committee that put together the Martin Luther King Jr. Day celebration that we have observed ever since, every year here in the Palm Springs area. Joe Beaver was a man of color who was one of the first to ever volunteer to be in the Marines during the big war, World War II. He was an amazing, thoughtful, passionate, intelligent, articulate man who made standing up for civil rights and living for civil rights a part of his life. All of his life. Rabbi Hurwitz was the rabbi of one of the large temples here in Palm Springs. He was a patient man. He was a kind man. He was a compassionate man. He was a wonderful speaker. And I met the two of them because I volunteered when, at the time, I was head of the National Organization for Women here locally. I met the two Joes on that committee putting together the commemoration of Martin Luther King for our vicinity. They both died very recently, and I wrote a letter lamenting the fact that I had not been in close touch with either of them leading up to their death. Don't let the people you care about pass without you getting the chance to let them know that you care about them and that they made a difference in the world. I'll be here next Saturday. I hope you'll join me here at IHUB Radio.